I'd like to call to order the July 15th, 2021 TPA Governing Board meeting. The Palm Beach TPA is conducting this meeting, as we have been for several months now, both in person and virtually using the Zoom webinar platform. Instructions to join the virtual meeting as well as contact information for assistance is provided on our published meeting agenda. This morning, in light of the tragic events that occurred about 3 weeks ago in Miami, in lieu of having our invocation this morning, what I'd like to do is ask everyone to stand and join us in observing a moment of silence for the people from the Chaplain Towers, their families, and all their loved ones. Thank you all. Will you please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you all. It's just such a tragedy and such a loss of life and so much pain related to this situation. Okay. I'd like to also talk about, want to modify our meeting agenda. I understand we have several of our distinguished members on this board who will be participating in a very important news conference concerning Cuba. So I applaud you in your endeavors to address this issue. I don't know if you're for or against, but that's, I guess we'll find out at the press conference, right? But in light of that, I want you to be able to make that appointment. So we're going to modify the agenda this morning, and I want to go right to the areas, the items on the agenda that we have to vote on. That way is showing we have a quorum. Hopefully we have a quorum. I'm going to have attendance taken at this time.
So I'll motion to...
I'm sorry, if I can do roll call and then we'll do modifications to the agenda. So for roll call, I'm only calling attendance for the members present in person. If you are an alternate here on behalf of a representative, please state so when I call your name. Steve Wilson.
Here.
Yvette Drucker is absent. Andy Thompson.
Thankful to be here.
Stephen Graham.
Present.
Shelley Petrolia. Joel Flores. Jim Koretsky.
Here.
Christopher McVoy, Joni Brinkman,
here.
Catherine Waldron, Chelsea Reed,
here.
Melissa McKinley is absent. Maria Marino,
here.
Maria Sachs,
here.
Greg Weiss,
Commissioner Bernard. Hello.
I can hear you, Commissioner Bernard. I'll mark Commissioner Weiss as
walking in. I'll be there in 1 minute.
Okay. So I'll mark his attendance when he walks into the room. Douglas Lawson, Michael Napoleon.
Present.
Christina Lambert.
Present.
Joseph Peduzzi.
Here.
Robert Weinroth.
Present.
Fred Pinto.
Here.
We have a quorum in person, Mr. Chair.
All right, so we do have a quorum. Now, regarding individuals attending remotely, we have what, one?
At some point, Commissioner Bernard will join us in person. So I guess two.
Commissioner Weinroth was going to join us remotely.
Yes, Commissioner Weinroth is our present remotely.
So is anyone here is okay with that? Seeing that everyone's okay, so he will be able to fully participate in the meeting. All right, now with that, do I need a motion to modify the agenda?
Just for the record, I'm sorry, I have multiple people talking to me. Commissioner McVoy walked in the room and then Mayor Petrolia is also present.
Okay.
And
so
as far as
our quorum.
Yes. As far as modifications to the agenda, I believe you did have some that you wanted to rearrange
yes.
the agenda.
So what I stated how I wanted to modify the agenda, I wanted to move right to, I want to skip the reports initially up front, and we could do that after if everyone wants to, but I wanted us to get right to the items that we have to have a quorum to vote on. That way we will get this done in a timely fashion so those who have to depart for this very important press conference, they will be able to do that. Do I need a motion for that? Okay.
So I'll move to move up action items 2A, 2B, and 2C. In front of general public comments.
I'll second that.
Do you have a second?
I had a second by Chelsea Reed.
All right. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Let the record show the motion carried unanimously. And we are moving with a modified agenda. Therefore, we're going to go right to item 2A. This is a motion to approve a resolution approving a merit increase for our executive director in fiscal year 22. Apparently, the way that the our ground rules are set up and the contract of employment is set up, the chair is supposed to provide an evaluation of the executive director once a year and present to the board recommendations on the outcome of the evaluation. But it also gave an option to establish a committee, which is the option we chose to go with, a committee of 5 members of the board, where we did convene and thoroughly went over the performance characteristics of the TPA and the executive director, as well as we got a presentation on the strategic plan and accomplishments and provided feedback and input for modifications. We'll hear about that information on this updated strategic plan later on. But with that, we took into view the outstanding performance of not only the executive director, but the TPA as a whole. And we also took into view that the prior year, the executive director did not receive a merit increase. It was a 9-month review period, but the bottom line was he stayed flat last year. So as a result of our deliberations, which I thought was fantastic, and I will invite any member of the that was on the committee, if you'd like to make comments, I will give you an opportunity to do that. In fact, I'll do that before I ask for a motion. The recommendation is that we provide the executive director with a 10% increase, both for his base compensation and what is it called? Deferred income. So before I ask for a motion, I open the floor for any members who are participating in that discussion, if they'd like to add anything. Maria?
Well, it was a lively discussion with several different suggestions, and the one that we came up with was actually all of us did agree was the best for this position. And Nick has done a wonderful job in navigating the waters along with his staff over the last couple of years, from the transition from being under the county auspices to in a standalone organization here in this building. So I applaud you for all you've done, and along with our staff, and highly endorse this recommendation.
Who was next? Was you, Ed? I can't see from here. Okay, I think it was next. Okay. You're up.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate you allowing me to participate at least for a couple of minutes virtually. I also thank Commissioner Bernard for walking very fast and got me here very fast. To the discussion about the executive director's salary, we certainly gave it a lot of attention, the subcommittee, and I think in all candor, the committee was actually willing to go a little bit higher on the salary as we were discussing the past performance. And again, as the chair mentioned, the fact that we had skipped a merit increase last year. And it was after some consideration that we settled on the 10%. And while it probably sounds a little high in comparison to what we're doing overall with a lot of our municipal employees, I think that it's certainly worthwhile as far as what he has done for this agency. We did a comparative analysis of the other agencies throughout the country, mostly here in Florida. And even after this increase, Nick's salary will be on the bottom quartile of where the salary ranges are for administrators of a similar sized TPA or MPO. So I feel very comfortable with the proposal that we're putting before this body to make this an increase on behalf of our executive director. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I echo the comments made by my colleagues on the subcommittee and say that when you combine the fact that Nick has navigated the very difficult waters of the past couple of years, combine that with the fact that he's not gotten a pay raise, and combine that with the fact that I think we all, you know, acknowledge that he does an exceptional job, you know, on the job all the time. I think it was a very, very easy decision to to determine that he merited this increase, recognizing, of course, that there's been no increase the last few years. And it was like Commissioner Weinroth, Vice Mayor Weinroth just mentioned, you know, it doesn't even put him necessarily near the top of the analysis when it comes to where he ranks with regard to other TPAs and MPOs of similar size. So I think it was a very easy decision to give him this increase. And I hope that everybody sees it the same way and that we give it to him today. Okay.
Steve, no? Mayor?
I was there too. And I think Nick did a great job.
I know you always like to comment, so I want to make sure you. Okay, those were all the members who participated on the committee. Now, we open the floor for any questions from members on the board. Any members have any questions, comments? Andy, you still want to speak?
Oh, okay. I'll move the agenda item.
Mr. Chair, just for the record, there are no public comments on this item.
I was just going to ask you that question.
Second.
There are no public comments remotely, and we have no comment cards locally. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Move to adopt.
Second.
Motion and second. This particular item does not require a roll call for the vote, so I'm going to say we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Please let the record show that there were no opposed, that the resolution was approved 5-0. Congratulations. Okay. Moving right along, item 2B. Item 2B is a resolution approving the fiscal year 23-27 list of priority projects. Another one of our wonderful acronyms, LOPP, L-O-P-P. And we're going to get an update, an accelerated update from Andrew on this item. You're on, sir.
Good morning, everyone. Yes, we'll begin an accelerated presentation here. It's actually going to be a combined presentation with a few of our staff members who handle the various programs that you'll see in the list of priority projects. And so since this is an accelerated presentation, we're only going to be providing the highlights of changes that are ones that were adopted in the previous list of priority projects, and then we'll be highlighting any of the new changes. And this is actually a required document by Florida statutes. And what this really is our federal and state prioritized funding, the ones that we directly prioritize for projects. This is that formal document that is given to FDOT, and then we draft our tip off of. Our mission to collaborative plan, prioritize and fund the transportation system, focusing here on the prioritization process. And to get to the adoption of a transportation improvement program, the next one being the fiscal year 23-27 transportation improvement program, it all starts with the vetting of projects, working with FDOT and our locals and other roadway and facility owners. And then those products are vetted into our list of priority projects. So what you see before you today are products that have been vetted and are eligible. And so in the list of priority projects, we go through our state road modifications, our local initiatives, and our transportation alternatives. Those are then formally adopted and given to FDOT to create their draft tentative work program. And that work program then forms the basis of our transportation improvement program. So the first program we have for you all is state road modifications, and I'm going to present, or Connor Campobasso from our team is going to present on that item.
Thank you, Andrew, and thank you all for having me here today. My name is Connor Campobasso, and I am the Long Range Transportation Plan Coordinator here at the TPA. And one of the programs that I manage is the State Road Modifications Program, which is a program designed to construct and enhance state roadways to advance the TPA's vision. And it does this through a variety of ways, through a variety of different projects, through things like safety projects, complete streets projects, transit enhancements, as well as technology improvements and resiliency projects. And these, as the name suggests, reside mainly on the state roadways. And this program is allocated about $20 million per year in state funding, as well as some additional funding from additional revenues. There's two different types of projects that are part of this program. There are brand new projects, so new projects that have not been adopted into the TIP, and those, when awarded, are adopted in the new fifth year of the TIP. And then there's also modifications to existing projects that are already adopted into the TIP. And for those projects, we do our best to assign funding to the year that it is already programmed in the TIP. So Keeping in the theme of accelerated presentation, I just wanted to give a brief rundown of the program itself as it stands today. So we're moving forward 27 projects that are currently programmed in the LOPP with three adjustments made to three individual projects, one of which is the Atlantic Avenue project, which is having some scope changes due to the discussion actually here at the board. We're seeking separated bike lanes on that project. In addition to this, Broadway Avenue in West Palm Beach is also experiencing some scope changes, and this is to address some capacity concerns as well as some bike ped concerns in that area. So they're going to try to do some more complete streets elements while trying to retain at least some of the capacity that that roadway has today. And the third change is the removal of a project on US 1 in the village of North Palm Beach, and this was at the request of the village itself. So in addition to those 27 projects, we are also seeking four new projects as well as three modifications. And I've broken those out here for you today. So I won't cover them all for you, but they are available in the backup towards the bottom of the state road modifications list. So with that, I'll pass it back over to Andrew, and he's going to cover the local initiatives program. Thank you.
Okay, the local initiatives program. This is actually a program administered by Jason Price in our office. He's our transportation improvement program coordinator. So he works with the applicants for this program and with FDOT to push these projects forward. And so the local initiatives program is a competitive application process here at the TPA using federal funds for federal aid eligible roadways. And so this really advances lower cost, non-regionally significant transportation projects in our communities that go towards meeting our goals, objectives, and targets in our long-range transportation plan. It's around $22.8 million a year. And these projects really, when they're prioritized, designs typically in the third year of the program, and then construction is typically 5 years out. And highlights for you for this program. The first is the 2020 applications, which you don't see on the screen here, I'll state it. The 2020 applications that were prioritized last year, some of those were not funded in a work program last year due to inefficient funds. So those are at the top of the list for this year. And that's five projects totaling $12 million. And then what you see on the screen here today are the 2021 applications. So these are four new projects, new applications that were submitted and vetted that we are prioritizing for our list of priority projects. And that's totaling $14.5 million. So it's SFRTA, Palm Beach County on Prosperity Farms Road, Indian Trail Improvement District, and then also West Palm Beach. And then the next program we have is Transportation Alternatives, and I'll hand it over to Alyssa Frank.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Alyssa Frank. I'm the pedestrian bicycle coordinator here, and I also oversee the Transportation Alternatives Program. So this is a program that has about $3.3 million in federal funds available every year, and the purpose is to actually fund non-motorized infrastructure and safe routes to school projects. Eligible projects include complete streets, bicycle and pedestrian infrastructure, traffic calming, recreational trails, historic preservation, and safe routes to school. And these projects are actually eligible to be constructed both on and off that federal aid eligible roadway network. Again, the annual funding amount is $3.3 million a year, with the projects having a maximum amount or cost of $1 million and a minimum of $250,000. And so the timeline for these projects, the design is funded in year one and the construction is funded in year three. So this year, all projects from the past years are moving forward. And this year we received four eligible applications. Again, I had mentioned the total eligible amount or the total federal funding available is $3.3 million. So we can fund most of these projects. The total requested amount this year was $3.55 million. So the four applications we did receive were from Palm Beach Gardens, Boca Raton, Indian Trail Improvement District, and Wellington. And they are, again, totaling $3.55 million. So with this, we are requesting a motion to adopt the fiscal year 23 through 27 list of priority projects.
Okay, thank you. At this time, do we have any public comments prior submitted or remotely submitted?
No, Mr. Chair.
Any
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion to adopt.
I'm sorry, I want to give everybody a chance to comment first, but hold on to that motion. I want to give everybody a chance to give their input. So we have no public comments. All right, then I'm closing public comments for this agenda item. Is there any members on the board who'd like to ask a question or a comment? Seeing none.
I have
one.
Oh, you
okay,
have two.
See, there was one.
I'll make it fast. I know everyone has to go. So I'm just looking at the what was ranked as number one by the BT PAC, which is our Palm Beach Gardens effort to repave Prosperity Farms. I'd like to, if we're going to take the time to invest in this facility, we really need to make it excellent and reflective of the vision here at the TPA. And so with that, I'm not pulling it, but I do want the county as lead agency as they look to widen and repave it to really consider putting in a proper bike facility, not just widening it and putting another bike lane on the shoulder. If we're really thinking about using this 880 mindset of whether you're 8 years old or 80 years old, we want you on our bike lanes. Right now, the only people who will ride that bike lane once we build it like this will be those in spandex going 25 miles an hour. So we have an opportunity to really do it right this time. So I would like to register a request to revisit it and have the TPA work with the county and engineering to just take a look and make sure we're doing all we can to make it a proper, safe bike lane.
And given the board's new emphasis on making bike laning and bicycling safer, certainly, how should we address that?
Well, I think this conversation is a great start to that. The county has submitted an application for widening the road to just provide a designated bike lane, a 4 or 5 foot, depending on the segment of the corridor. What Council Member Reed is asking is, can we work together with county staff to revise that proposal and see if we can introduce a separated bike lane.
Okay.
Is the conversation that was had when we were talking about Atlantic Avenue.
Correct.
And as you'll find later on our agenda, a separated bike lane is actually a new term recognized in state statute because of Senate Bill 950 that passed this session.
Yes.
Right. And so I think the state as a whole is moving towards how do we provide better separation between fast moving cars, that a high volume of fast moving cars, and people who want to bicycle along our roadways. Prosperity Farms is an interesting challenge because it's a two-lane road, so it's a relatively small facility, not carrying a lot of cars per se, you know, in the 10,000 range, but not in the 30, 50, 70,000 range where some of our bigger roads are. But it's also a high-speed facility. The posted speed is 35 to 40 miles per hour, and so vehicles are traveling
50 miles an hour.
Yeah, they're traveling along the corridor at a relatively decent speed, which makes it an uncomfortable environment for bicyclists who are less aggressive. You know, I think we introduced you to the term mammals at our last board meeting. And so I think we've got the direction. We're going to have some funding constraints that we will seek to work through and work around.
Okay.
But I think the request is clear, and we can work with county staff on revisions to their application.
All right, so we're leaving it on the list, and we'll work with county staff to move forward with those additional recommendations. It's on the record. Is there anything else we have to do other than, can we just approve the list as is then?
I believe you can approve the list as is, and we have direction.
Okay. Yes. Any other questions, comments? Betsy.
Yes. As for the Boynton Beach Boulevard, I was just going to ask what separated means, because, you know, a lot, does a line, is it buffered? I'm glad that it is a protected area. And I'm glad that, you know, what I think this board should look at is the speed that the roads are on, you know, and the amount of traffic, 40 miles per hour over, I think is the threshold, because of the likelihood of death being hit at that speed. And so as we move forward, that's what I'm glad that we're doing this, and glad to see that it's part of the list of priority projects.
Can we send something out that this gives the specific definition of what that is?
Actually, Mr. Chair, if I may, item 3A, the backup material for the presentation that we have, we've both included the exact language that was introduced into state statute as part of this session, and a presentation explaining with pictures exactly what the words mean when you're building roads.
Okay. Any other questions, comments? Okay, seeing none, now I'm looking for a motion.
I'm sorry, Vice Mayor, you turned your microphone off.
Who did that? A motion to approve the fiscal year 23-27 list of priority projects, LOP.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Once again, this item does not require a roll call vote. So we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Nay.
And for the record, I want to reflect that I have Commissioners Lambert and Peduzzi that are opposed.
Okay. All right, the record shows that the motion was approved with the noted oppositions. Okay, very good. Moving right along. Item 2C is a motion to approve the TPA's fiscal year 22 strategic plan. And this is, I guess we're gonna have Valerie do the presentation for us.
That's right.
Before Valerie starts, everyone knows that we're losing this very special person. I think you all received the letter. And this will be, I guess, your last meeting with us. Well, I just wanna say, we're gonna miss you mightily, but the people, the organization that you're going to, they I hope they recognize the fine gem that they're getting. So we thank you so much for your service and contributions to this organization. And who knows, maybe one day you'll come back.
Thank you so much. I'm going to miss all of you very much. And it's been a wonderful experience to be at the part of the TPA for the last 6.5 years. And Palm Beach County is definitely, even though Anchorage, Alaska is my hometown, Palm Beach County is definitely my second home. So who knows? But I do look forward to making a positive impact in my hometown. And
I'm sure you will.
I think the TPA is in great hands. And I look forward to the future of the TPA in Palm Beach County as well.
Okay, thank you.
So good morning, everyone. I'll be presenting our draft fiscal year 22 strategic plan. This is a best practice we've been doing since 2016. It's a year document. We just started fiscal year 22 on July 1st, and it runs through June 30th of next year. And this is above and beyond our 2-year unified planning work program, where we want to identify 3 to 6 specific and strategic actions and outcomes that we want to achieve over this next year to help us advance our mission and vision. So on June 21st, our TPA board committee, which consisted of 5 board members, met and reviewed draft recommendations from staff, and they provided us recommendations as well. We compiled that and presented it to our committees this month, and now we're bringing it to the board for final adoption. So I'm going to walk through what changed over the 6 goals. The first goal is engage the public. So under 1B, highlighted in red, the things that are underlined are new text, and the things that are striked through are deletions. So 1B, we said instead of expand social media outreach, we said let's expand social media following, and let's try to reach 4,000 followers. So right now we have a little over 3,000 followers. We want to reach 4,000. We also, our previous goal was to have 10 posts per month, and now we, instead of posts, we want to try to reach 25,000 impressions per month. For 1D, we had update the video of the TPA explaining the role of the TPA. We did that, and that's available. We're going to try and show that to you later today. So that was a one-time thing. Our new action is to increase public awareness of the TPA and try to get into at least 40 TPA-related media stories. And we have the news here today, so we're on our way there. For 1E, it was also a one-time action, provide live online access to board meetings. We did that over this past year during the pandemic. So that's something that we're continuing to do. Our new action that we're proposing is present TPA initiatives to partner agencies and groups with at least 15 presentations. So we'd like to go out into the community, to our local municipalities and partner agencies, to raise awareness about the TPA and engage the public even further. For goal 2, plan the system, we added a new action A to refine the countywide mobility vision and funding plan. So we want to work together to refine this vision of mobility for the county and develop a funding plan and work with the county and all of our municipalities to do that. For 2C, we said we've been doing walk and bike audits. Alyssa, our ped bike coordinator, has been doing a fantastic job. We want to raise that from 3 to 5 locations. So if anyone's interested, please reach out. for 2D, instead of publishing, we're doing publishing the long-range transportation plan implementation report. That's kind of an ongoing thing, so it's not so strategic. We striked through that, and we said, let's implement and update our Vision Zero action plan. So we created a Vision Zero action plan a couple of years ago. We want to update that and make sure we're implementing the actions that we identified in there. For 2D, we striked through create Smart Palm Beach website. That's something that we did. It was a one-time thing. It's available, and we're going to continue monitoring that and making it even better. For 2E, create Complete Streets Opportunities Plan. We've been identifying and working on identifying opportunities for Complete Streets, but we realized that our Complete Street Design Guidelines that we created in 2017 are a little outdated now, and a lot has changed since then. So we want to update those, refine them, and make them even better. And then as part of that, continue to identify Complete Streets Opportunities. For goal 3, prioritize funding, we striked through notified partners of funding opportunities, because again, it's something that we're continuing to do on an ongoing basis. It's not so strategic. With update TA and LI scoring, those are our two funding programs we heard about a little earlier. And those, it's also something that we do on an ongoing basis every year. Our new action is create a state road modification scoring system. So we have an application process for our transportation alternatives grants and also for our local initiatives grants. We want to create a more formal process for applications that we get that are actually on the state roadway system. So we're already prioritizing those, but we want to actually formalize that process and encourage our municipalities to apply to us for projects on the state roadway system. In addition, we want to establish an application process for safety projects that could be just on DOT roads or on non-DOT roads, to formalize the process on specifically safety projects. And then on 3D, advocate for, we changed the wording a little here. So advocate for TPA adopted legislative policy positions. Since this past year we adopted those positions, we really want to advocate for those. For goal 4, implement projects, we've been working on reviewing upcoming projects, engaging stakeholders, working with FDOT, the county, municipalities, to promote our TPA vision and priorities. We want to up that number of 20 projects to 50 projects and really get a hold on all these projects coming up and to be able to make sure we're trying to advance our priorities and our vision, and also consider the local president's preferences in that process. We strike through 4C, provide TPA priority project status report, because it's something that we're just already doing on an ongoing basis. For 4D, we monitor the collection of and use of this SCETS tax revenue and manage lane revenue. And we strike through MCORs because that's no longer relevant. And we added, let's also monitor construction funds allocated for plant materials per Florida Statutes 334.0446. Goal 5, collaborate with partners. We strike through collect ped bike activity counts. We're doing that on an ongoing basis. We're working with the county, and we're working with the traffic signal maintaining agencies, looking at different technologies, and we plan to continue doing that and expanding those locations. As a more strategic item, we actually combined the previous A and B. We had it separate, provide training for board members and provide training for I'm thinking of a future action, but for 5A, we said assist local governments with transportation and mobility studies and plans. So we added the word mobility studies. This is something that we're doing. We're working with our municipalities to be a funding partner for those efforts and to do 3 per year. We changed the word workshops for 5B, conduct events on topics of interest, and we want to do at least 4. Our goal before was 3. So that could include workshops or other events on topics of interest. And we are almost done with a Complete Streets projects video highlighting projects here in South Florida and in Florida and Palm Beach County. We hope to bring that to you in September. So our new action there is that we want to create a mobility options video. So during our board committee, it was mentioned, what about, I can go to the Palm Trans website or Tri-Rail's website, but what if I just want to know about all the options in Palm Beach counties and how to get around? Is there an educational video or something that can give me an overview of that? And so we want to highlight that and provide, you know, residents and visitors a video that covers all those different options to get around Palm Beach County. So goal six, this is the one I was thinking of, administer the agency. So action A, we used to have board and staff training as separate items. We combined those and said we still want to provide our board members and staff trainings to go to conferences, local workshops, and we upped that number since we combined it to 40 trainings. So we encourage our board members and staff to attend trainings and support them in doing that. For goal 6B, we added a new item that said modify TPA committees to support TPA initiatives. So we want to revise, we want to look at our committees and our makeup and make sure that maybe we need new members or look at that makeup and make sure that it's advancing our mission and our vision. So that's something that we want to do over this next year, especially since safety has been such a priority that we've been talking about lately in Vision Zero. We want to make sure that we're all moving in that direction. And lastly, goal 6D, the outcome, we just kind of striked through and said we want to provide summaries and the fiscal year 21 comprehensive annual financial report. So I know that was a mouthful, but those are the proposed changes for this new fiscal year.
So you ready for questions? Before we take questions from members on the board, do we have any prior public comment requests?
No, Mr. Chair.
Do we have any public comment cards submitted?
No, Mr. Chair.
All right, then we'll close public comment on this agenda item and take questions from members. Go ahead, Steve.
Hi, Valerie. It's good to see you, and we're sorry to see you leave, but hopefully you'll think of us down here warmly.
Okay.
Warm me up when I'm cold.
Yes. I sent you an email regarding the FDOT's landscape improvement plan. Is that part of our strategic plan to help this MPO talk to FDOT and our partners so that we are creating a more sustainable transportation system and resiliency dealing with different stormwater aspects of the roads and the urban tree canopy?
We added per your comment for 4D, we added that we want to monitor and pay closer attention in looking at what funding is being allocated for plant materials. And so by that, we're thinking about landscaping and tree canopy and all that. So we definitely, that's where we added that language, but that's the goal, is to engage more in that discussion and push more for those things.
Okay. So what I would also would hopefully in the complete street is that we look at the resiliency of an urban tree canopy as part of that. If Nick, is that okay to include as part of that?
Mr. Chair. Yeah. I think just for the rest of the board, you know, sometimes we get so specific that we lose sight of what we were trying to accomplish with the first strategic action. So 4D, the statutory reference in that is actually helping me and my conversations with DOT remember exactly where in state law the requirement to spend 1.5% of their statewide construction funds on landscaping outcomes, where that state law lives. So we probably should have said monitor investment in landscaping, but because we went specific, it's going to help me in the future.
Okay.
Referring back to the exact paragraph in statute that says, are you doing this and how well is it going? To your second point, so I wanted first the board to understand that's why we wrote it that way, so that we would remember where to look for that 1.5% obligation and focus attention on how those funds are being used. To your second point, can we incorporate tree canopy investments in our complete streets design guideline update? Absolutely. Okay. It makes sense. It's consistent with the resiliency goals. It's consistent with the desired outcomes of the TPA for environmental sustainability and for promoting a walkable, bikeable environment. Because when you introduce tree canopies into the right of way, you've actually created a reduction in the heat sink effect of the asphalt and a more comfortable experience for the people who choose to walk and bicycle along our roadway. So all of those advance the TPA's established goals of growing the percentage of people who choose to walk and bike and help with our sustainability and environmental resiliency efforts as well.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. You are, ma'am.
Thank you. Now, first, I just wanted to say thank you so much. It's a very clear, easy to understand document, very easy to follow and to make sure that we're meeting and achieving our goals. As it relates to goal number one, engaging the public, I was pleased to see that we're changing from outreach to following, from posts to impression. And it wasn't lost on me that the topic of this goal is called engaging the public. So I just wanted to make sure also that in addition to measuring these steps that we're taking, that we're also measuring how people engage with us, because we can look for impressions, but are they commenting back? Are they showing up to these events? And I think it's also tied to 5B, those events of topics of interest. As we look at what and plan what events those are, that we think about who are we trying to engage and how deeply are they engaging with us? Thank you.
I think just to add to your point, I think it's interesting. We need to, it's not just the general public that we're trying to engage, but we really want to engage the rest of the elected officials in all the towns and also unincorporated, you know, the improvement districts, engage them as well to make sure that they understand what direction we're trying to go and how we're trying to move this ship in maybe a different direction, and the role that they will have to play in that, and the role that we want them to play in letting their citizens know that these are the things we're doing and here's what's in store for you and how we want to improve your quality of life, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, Maria.
Thank you. Actually, when we had our committee meeting to discuss Nick's raise, this was also part of the committee meeting. We spent more time on this than we did on talking about your raise, if I'm not mistaken. And what I'd like to say is that the committee was in full support of this, the way it came to pass, and we had a very long discussion. And so I'm, any other cards up? I make a motion, we accept.
Second.
Okay. Anyone want to comment? No? Okay, let's make sure. Okay, so a motion and a second. This item does not require a roll call. So with a motion and a second, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? We have no opposed. Marge, let the record show that the report and strategic plan was approved unanimously. Okay, you all are wondering, what about the consent agenda? We want to get these other items out up front first, but has everyone had a chance to review the consent agenda? Mm-hmm. And is there anything?
Make a motion,
here?
We approve.
Second.
Does anyone who wants to comment or pull anything off the consent agenda? No? Okay, we had a motion.
Second.
And a second. A motion and a second. All in favor of approving the consent agenda?
Aye.
Any opposed? We have no opposed. Okay, Marge, let the record show that consent agenda was approved 5-0. I was going to mention, but since nobody wanted to talk about it, is item 6, which I think is a very important component that's on this agenda. It's the under section 2.4A of holidays, that the TPA personnel handbook will recognize Juneteenth as a paid holiday. So just wanted to mention that on the record. That was part of this agenda. Okay. But I do think it's an important action that was taken. Okay. That brings us to, all right, at this time, we have concluded all business that required us to have a quorum. We're going to go into some informational reports. We have a very important one coming up. It's an update on Senate Bill 950.
Chair, when we modified the agenda, the next, I believe, would be the general public comments from chair and member comments, and the executive director's report.
Well, technically, no, but yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, just for the record, I don't have any general public comments.
Yes. And we have no
public comment cards either.
Okay. What I was going to suggest, those of you who have to depart, all right, we can take a 3-minute recess to give you an opportunity to make your departure. That way you could all do it all at once. And so if you want to do that, we'll take a 3-minute recess to allow those who need to depart.
If we could get a 5-10 minute report from the executive director, and then
you want to stay for the report. That's what I wanted to know. Yeah. Okay, I'm just trying to, you know, give you the leverage leeway you need. Okay, I want us to get this update, and then we'll get the executive director's report. So, Alyssa, where are you?
Point of order. That's that wasn't on the order of the agenda. Do you want us to remodify the agenda for that?
Yes, I just want to get this done.
Okay.
Okay.
So motion to...
We have the press here.
Amend the agenda
for this presentation
for item
well.
3A. To...
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. You're up, ma'am. And the camera is rolling.
Thank you. So again, my name is Alyssa Frank. I am the pedestrian bicycle coordinator here. And I am here to present our understanding of Senate Bill 950, which is a bill for bicyclist safety. So I'm going to go over quite a few things in this presentation. First, this bill actually does add a definition for bicycle lanes and separated bike lanes. This also does revise requirements for a few different movements that are on the roadway. So I'm going to go through each of those movements individually. The first is for drivers of motor vehicles who are overtaking bicyclists. The second is for turning bicycles. The third is for riding two abreast. And the last is for cyclist groups at stop signs. And I do also, or I will also touch on that this bill does now require FDOT to have an annual awareness and safety campaign. In addition to, it requires the driver's license exam to include questions from a box of 25 bicycle safety questions, or a bank of that. And all of these went into effect on July 1st of 2021. So new definitions in Section 316.003 of Florida statutes include one for a bicycle lane and one for a separated bicycle lane. So the definition of a bicycle lane is any portion of a roadway which is designated by pavement markings and signs for preferential or exclusive use by bicycles. So you see this on the screen. There are 2 6-inch white markings with a bicycle marking in between, and that is what a designated bicycle lane looks like. The next is for a separated bicycle lane, which is a bicycle lane that is separated from motor vehicle traffic by a physical separator. So in this picture, you see there is actually a 6-foot curbed landscaping buffer between the through lanes and the bicycle lane. So it's a nice separated facility there. Now I'm going to dive into the different movements that I had previously discussed. So the first one we're going to talk about is for cars overtaking bicycles or e-bikes. So this requirement or revised requirement actually changed Florida Statute 316.0875 for no passing zones. So this now allows motor vehicleists to safely and briefly, keywords, to drive over left of the center line of the roadway to pass a cyclist with a minimum of 3 feet passing distance. So you see this on the left side of the screen. There is the orange vehicle that is behind the 2 yellow cyclists, and there is oncoming traffic. That orange vehicle that's behind the cyclists must legally remain a safe distance behind the cyclists until they're able to pass, because there is no oncoming traffic. When that oncoming traffic is gone, that orange vehicle, and we see this on the right side of the screen, may legally, briefly and safely cross that yellow center line just to pass the cyclists. And then after they have a safe distance between them and those cyclists, so a minimum of 3 feet, they are able to cross back over the center line and they have to continue on their roadway. So this is the first movement. The second one is for turning vehicles. So this actually helps to prevent right hook crashes. So we're going to first look at the left side of the screen. So there is a red vehicle making a right-hand turn, and there is a cyclist less than 20 feet behind them. That vehicle is no longer permitted to make that turn with the cyclist less than 20 feet behind them, because when that cyclist keeps going and that car turns, that cyclist will inevitably crash into that car. Now, what is legal now, as you see on the right side of the screen, that red vehicle is legally permitted to make that right turn if a cyclist is greater than 20 feet away. And that is saying that by the time that that cyclist gets to that stop bar, that red car will have already made that turn. So it's safer for the cyclist, and again, prevents right hook crashes. The next movement is for cyclists that are turning left. So when a cyclist is turning left, they are permitted legally to actually take that left turn lane to themselves. So on the left side of the screen, we see a bicyclist in the yellow box that is okay. And that is just highlighting that, again, that cyclist is legally able to take that left turn lane. Now, after they have crossed through the intersection, they should stay as close to that right edge of the roadway as possible. So you cross through that intersection as a cyclist, you're not turning into that inside lane, you're turning out to that outside lane, and again, staying close to the curb. So for cyclists that are riding single file when there are no bicycle lanes on a roadway, like we see on the screen now, the cyclist, again, must ride as close as practicable to the right-hand curb or edge of the roadway, but they are able to ride in the roadway. So the motor vehicles behind it must, you know, provide that safe amount of space, and to pass it are able to, when they don't have any other traffic in that left lane, cross over to that left lane and then pass that cyclist. But the cyclist is permitted to ride on the roadway. Now, when there is a bike lane, the cyclists are required to actually ride within that bicycle lane. If it's a narrow bicycle lane, they are required to ride single file. So what you see in that left corner or top left corner of the screen is a bicycle lane that is designated with three cyclists riding next to each other. They're not all within that lane. That is not allowed. The cyclists must be within those two lines for that designated facility. If they are able to, which we will see on the next screen, if the bicycle lane is wide enough, you are able to ride two abreast. However, you are not able to ride any wider than that or with any more people next to you if you are riding on the roadway. So again, we see that picture in the top left corner. That's not okay. We have to stay within those two lines, and three next to each other is not okay. If you're riding on the roadway, two abreast is the maximum, and that's only if the bicycle lane is wide enough to safely accommodate that. So where can we ride more than two abreast? This is only possible on bicycle paths. So on the screen now, we see the El Rio Trail in Boca Raton. Since this is not a bicycle facility that is on the roadway, we can actually have a larger group of cyclists riding together. So that's what we see here, a group of four cyclists, five cyclists all riding as a group. That is okay in this condition only. So for another movement, bicyclists overtaking a bicycle in the bicycle lane. Or so let's say you're riding and there's a cyclist that's a little slower than you in front of you. When there is no oncoming traffic and there are no challengers or obstacles, the cyclist that is riding faster behind the slower cyclist may cross over into that travel lane to overtake the slower cyclist. However, after they have passed that cyclist, they must continue and go back into that bicycle lane and carry on. So that is what we see here. You're allowed to cross over, and then after you've overtaken that cyclist, you have to cross back over back into the bicycle lane. And the last major movement that we're going to talk about are for cycling groups at stop signs. So before I dive into this, I do want to remind everyone that cyclists are required to actually obey all traffic signals, stop signs, stop lights, all of that. A cyclist is considered a vehicle on the roadway. So when you're at a stop sign, the cyclist must come to a complete stop because, again, we are following the traffic laws. And if you're a group of 10 after you've come to that complete stop, you are actually able to travel through that intersection as a group of 10 or less. Now, this blue car here on the screen wants to cross through that intersection, but they are not able to unless that group of 10 cyclists has safely crossed through. And if it's a group that's larger than 10 cyclists, the rest of that group must wait back. And then after that vehicle makes their movement, the rest of the group can continue. So groups larger than 10 cannot travel through stop signs at like once at a time. They have to wait and then interchange the movements with the vehicles that are waiting. And so as a reminder, this bill does require FDOT to launch a safety campaign. So some that we've seen in the past include Red Out for Rail Safety, Put It Down, Don't Text and Drive, Alert Today, Alive Tomorrow, Driving Down Fatalities. There will be one for this bill, and we will share it as soon as it is available, as well as pick up our own educational efforts. Additionally, and most importantly, this bill actually does require driver's license tests to include a a few questions from a bank of 25 bicycle safety questions. Now, this is really important to us because this is something that we've actually been lobbying for. This is something that's one of our legislative priorities. So it's great to see that it is now in the bill. So with that, that is the end of my presentation. If you have any additional questions, don't hesitate to reach out to me. Additionally, in the agenda and the presentation, there is a link to the direct language in the bill, and that you can see on the screen as well, too. So.
Chair, I'm sorry if you can turn your mic. Thank you, Nick.
I'm sorry. Any questions from members of the public?
No, I have not received any virtual comments or any comment cards.
All right. We'll close public comment then for this agenda item. And I think.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that presentation. And, you know, I applaud our legislature for doing something positive in this, but I don't think there's anybody in this room that's going to be taking a driver's test in the near future. And I think that means we need to be doing PSAs. I'm very happy to see the press here. I think that we're going to need to reach out to the press to get this message out. I'm particularly concerned about the situation with large groups of bicyclists being out there, and that they're going to know at 10, they're supposed to stop at a stop sign. I think that we're going to have conflicts between bicycles and automobiles, maybe even more because of these perceived changes and bicyclists thinking that they have more of a right of way than they did. I think we know that a lot of the accidents and fatalities are not just because of the driving habits of our motoring public, but our bicycle riders also have a responsibility. So, Nick, I think we're going to need to put a real emphasis on both you reaching out to the press and getting out there on in the media, and also us doing PSAs, so that this information is being disseminated and people understand the new rules of the road.
Absolutely. You were next.
Yeah, first I wanted to.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. You're on this. Go ahead. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much for that presentation. You know, this is an issue we've been talking about ever since I sat here. And that is separated pathways for bicyclists. Now we have a state law. My question is specifically, what are we doing as the agency for transportation in the county to make sure that, one, if there is a roadway that we're going to widen, we're going to modify, or we're going to build, will it have a separated bicycle lane? And two, what are we going to do to make sure that we proceed to educate the public right on what they need to do with regard to this law? This is
that's
a law.
Right. That's right.
And it's up to us. I know that the legislature has given money to FDOT to make sure that people are educated. However, we're the county agency. And I haven't looked at this, to tell you the truth, carefully, in terms of what funds are we putting forth to educate the public. Signage, we have a lot of county roads, are our responsibility, and we need to make sure. So my question to you is, and this isn't, I don't want a speech. I want to know specifically, what are we doing to, the first thing, what are we doing to make sure that our roadways we'll have separated bicycle paths? And two, what are we doing specifically to educate the public with regard to the new law?
Okay, that's a long question.
Mr. Chair, I think two specific answers to the first question. We're the projects already through the Complete Streets policy adopted by this board, the projects that come through the TPA are being asked to provide those separated bike lanes. And so we are pushing hard on the roadway designers to say what you've proposed, if it doesn't include a separated bike lane, isn't good enough. So the Atlantic Avenue corridor is an example. The Boynton Beach corridor is a second example. The second thing that we're doing is recognizing that design standards change, that engineers, one of the things we heard from, I think, Mr. Crane last month was there are liability concerns with deviating from established standards for roadway designers. And so what we want to do is ensure that we understand what those details contain, and then we influence the standards to become more compatible with the desired outcomes for our communities. And that's what our Complete Streets Design Guidelines update is intended to do, to use that as a tool to influence the standards that are established and regulate the county, the cities, and the DOT and how they build the roads, so that when we say we want separated bike lanes, we can point to the documents that reinforce and allow those designers to build those separated bike lanes in a way that our communities really are clamoring for. Regarding the safety, it's a combination of factors. We have some funding associated with outreach and education, but a lot of the impact of this agency is through its partners and through earned media. It basically reaching out to the press and saying, we need your help, communicating the message to the general public that safety matters, that it's everyone's responsibility to understand their roles and the expected behaviors for you as a bicyclist, as a driver, as a pedestrian, when you're walking and driving and biking along our roadways. And we, as we design roads that clarify the expectations, that reinforce those expectations, and then we also educate our public, I think we can hope for that long-term trend to shift in the positive direction toward the Vision Zero outcomes that this agency has endorsed, trying to eliminate those traffic-related fatalities and serious injuries. Probably more of a speech than you asked for, but those are some specific things that we are definitely working on aggressively here at the TPA. If I can follow up, sure.
The follow-up is this. Are we going to get funds from the state to help with signage and education? I know we had a wonderful presentation beforehand about how we're reaching out on social media. Whatever the liability of the county is, it was. Now we have a state law that changes the Florida statutes. That was before July 1st, 2021. We now have a new law that has changed Florida statutes rather considerably. So one, if we could get, have we requested, I know they never, they usually will say no, but we have to ask, have we requested state funds to enable the county to promote and advocate this new state law, which is now in effect? And two, if not, will we reach out to our social media, which is free, you know, free to outreach, reach out to social media to educate people? And three, will we have signage to enforce on county roads the new state law? And then I'll, thank you.
So again, short answer, I'll give you a shorter answer. Yes, yes, and yes. There's an obligation on the department to do an educational campaign, and we're certainly going to partner with them on that. I do want to draw your attention back to item 2B on our agenda, the list of priority projects. So the TPA is really an entity that exists to both review the projects that are being advanced by our partners, by the county, by the state, by the cities, and to proactively allocate a portion of the overall transportation revenues available in Palm Beach County to the projects that this agency sees as most valuable. Bottom line, you have $45 million a year to spend on projects within Palm Beach County. That's not a huge resource when you look at a county our size, but it's a significant investment of public dollars that we can make in the reconstruction of our roadways and the better marking and signing for the safe environments and the reinforced messages that we're seeking.
Thank you.
Yep.
Just to underscore these comments, that one of the questions I would ask is that we're going to reach out to the sheriff and have a conversation about what's his plans for
enforcement,
because then you know how it works. You pass a law, but now you're faced with, okay, how do you make that law work and how do you enforce it? So that's a question that needs to be asked. Good, Jim.
A few quick items. First of all, I want to express extreme appreciation for the timeliness of getting this. I think it's a testament that this passes on July 1 in the very first TPA meeting. Staff is helping us to present to us. We first know. The minute I saw this, I knew I wanted to first come here and hear it. And then I can assure you that the local government that I serve will make sure we're making use of this information to help do our part. That's both using our social media avenues as well as our police agency, who's done this in the past. And I would first say the first step that standard practice in town is that we'll have our police agency begin some public education, which is easily done when somebody is not complying with the new law, and you give some time to learn about it, and word gets around pretty quickly. So quite frankly, I think that's one of the most effective ways that I can assure you will happen. We have a perfect corridor for it, where there's a lot of bikers, A1A. Mm-hmm. Secondly, I just wanted to share and give a shout out to the county. One county engineering, right hook crashes is something you know, I think all of us have seen a number of events where there is a pedestrian or bicycle fatality or serious injury on right crashes. And while this, and I appreciate you kept it on topic of the legislation, but I just wanted to point out that, you know, I've observed more and more what exists at the intersections. And oftentimes there is some sight visibility issues at intersections. And so I'm so grateful that when I recently observed at one intersection, it's Military Trail in Indian Creek, that the county engineer who does traffic signalization, is a right-hand turn lane with a green, with a turn lane arrow, that if somebody's pushing the button and crossing that intersection, the drivers have to wait for the next turn signal cycle because they're given preference to the biker or the and the pedestrians that push the button. That's another way. So, you know, to get to Vision Zero, we have to do all of this, right? And I just wanted to, again, emphasize that there, the county agency was already, you know, was already engineering this in the signalization. I didn't want to miss this opportunity to emphasize that, you know, in addition to, so it's all of the above. But thank you. This is wonderful.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess this question is for either Nick or Alyssa. The legislation we just reviewed have some provisions that restrict bicyclists and favor cars and have some provisions that restrict cars and favor bicyclists. On the whole, what is your sense on, does this make an impact for bicycle safety overall?
You want
to? Sure. I can answer that. I think it does, as I think it comes down to education. When we educate them and tell them what, or educate everyone, both motor vehiclists and bicyclists, I do think that it will improve the safety for everyone. But I think it really does come down to that and making sure that people are aware, because as we heard, no one really knew about this until it was on the agenda for today. So it really comes down to that. But I don't know if Nick has anything to add.
Yeah, I think clarity of regulation helps navigate the conflict points that exist in our road network. And so when we know the rules and we, as Alyssa pointed out, when we educate our communities on what the rules are, what the expected behaviors are, then hopefully we'll get better outcomes. And then the second part of that is if we now implement these expected behaviors and we recognize this doesn't work as well as we had thought it would, that's why we have a legislative session every year. So we can make tweaks to the laws to reflect what would work better and promote more safe communities or more safe outcomes for the members of our community.
Chrissy.
Thank you so much. And as an avid cyclist, I just wanted to express my support for any action that this body takes to support this legislation, especially as it comes down to communication. I typically ride in a group of two, just me and my husband, or up to about 6 to 8. And we are always considerate, always following the rules of the road, but many times we're met with aggressive drivers who do not want bicyclists on the road. And so I think that the more we can do to help educate, to keep everybody safe, the better off we will be. And it's unfortunate that I even have to make this statement, but I think as part of that education, we need to think about de-escalation communication as well, so that when those aggravated situations happen, that we think about them as we do other situations where we're thinking about, you know, how can we de-escalate this so that it doesn't grow bigger? Thank you.
Joni.
Thank you. My concerns also are the right hook crashes. I think that situation puts equal responsibility on both the driver and the bicyclist.
Right.
And even on behalf of the driver, it's often hard to gauge where 20 feet is or how fast the bicyclist is traveling. So I would request that, since FDOT is responsible, at least at this point in time, and it has funding to do the outreach, that specifically be one of their main focuses, because I think that's the most difficult situation in all of the slides that we saw today.
Mayor Wilson.
Thank you. What an excellent presentation. SB 950 is so complex, but you made it real clear within 5 minutes. Thank you. I will hope that this agency consider, I know there's 39 cities, towns and villages in Palm Beach County, that we do that safety campaign. The law is the law. I mean, we have to understand that. And I think, I know it's very demanding, but Nick and to our president, do you think it's possible we can perhaps have this campaign starting with her to go around to these municipalities to educate, inform? You know, we talk all day, but it starts with us as an agency for Palm Beach County. I mean, I know we have some concerns about, hey, you know, roadways and byways, but it's got to start with us because we have to abide by it. And a lot of cities, believe it or not, you know, perhaps really not clear about, you know, what's it saying in that bill. And if you can start with your staff to start going around to the county, it will make a big difference. And then it's up to the municipalities and their staff and their community state leaders to help get the word out too. But I tell you, it's got to start with us.
Absolutely. Commissioner.
Thank you. As we pay attention to this bill, we also need to look at what the bigger picture is. The bigger picture is that all counties and municipalities really do need to revisit the idea of mobility and not just moving cars. That's an indication of what this bill is. This, they are telling us that as cities and counties, there are other non-motorized vehicles or electric bikes or whatnot on the roads we need to share. And we all as a group need to come together and make sure that going forward in the future, we truly have an overall mobility plan, not just bike plans. Thank you.
That's great. You have McBoy on the far right.
Yeah, no.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. Also, as an enthusiastic biker, I really appreciate the work. I agree with you. The education seems like a big thing. One piece and any help that TPA can do to maybe PowerPoint presentations, things that we can push out in our each of our communities is good. One thought that came to mind with the right hook part of it is, I remember from previous meetings, TPA has been compiling statistics on accidents. It might be interesting to emphasize the right hook ones in that context. And I agree with the comment made from Palm Beach that 20 feet is going to be difficult, particularly because almost always the bicycle is going to be moving. So what was 30 feet at one point is going to be 15 feet at another point in time. But the education is key with it. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions or comments?
Chair, I don't have any other tent cards raised, but I do want to note for the record that we have lost our quorum.
Okay, there's nothing else we have to vote on, is there?
No, but we just want to note it for the record.
Okay, note it for the record that we no longer have a quorum. All right, anything else you want to add?
Yeah, that's it.
Thank you for a great presentation. We appreciate that. I just want to say that big picture, absolutely. We have to keep an eye on the big picture. This is a piece of the puzzle, or a piece of the components, the moving parts in terms of the direction we're trying to move our county and in terms of transportation options. But I think it's absolutely a good thing to have some legislation on the books that supports our concern and our thoughts. And now we're at the implementation level and clearly getting the word out, you know, a roadshow, certainly I think is something that is probably important. And I'm interested in the 25 questions that are now going to be on the licensing requirement. Just as an exercise, I might ask Nick to send something out to all of us to personally take those questions to see where we come out on it. We don't want to know what the, you know, how well you did, but I just want everyone to get a chance to know what the questions look like that are going to be on this, on the driver's test, and see how well how much we know already and whether or not we'd be able to pass it. So keep eye on the mail. We'll see if we can send something out like that to everyone. Okay. With that, I'd like us to have the executive director's report.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thanks for everyone who's sticking around this morning. I know this is a busy morning for a lot of our elected officials. The items that we haven't already covered, there are probably two that I want to touch on. And just as a general reminder to the elected officials that serve on the TPA, the strategic plan is really your direction to me and my staff to figure out what to focus our resources on for the coming year and what we're seeking to accomplish. And so when you look at my director's report this morning, several of the items say pursuant to this action in the strategic plan. So when you tell me to do something, we're gonna demonstrate to you on a routine basis that we're actually doing those things. First one I wanna highlight is ped bike safety reviews. So this is an opportunity our staff will get together with local government, with school district, with law enforcement to go and walk a portion of a roadway and say, what do we see out here? You might be hearing concerns from constituents. And we wanted to provide a mechanism to capture those concerns and to really invest resources in getting out in the field. And so we've done four of these. We did one in Jupiter just last week. We're hoping to do even more of these in the coming year. This was an item in our strategic plan. I didn't put it on the slide, but I wanted to note, we were so enamored with Andy Thompson and the Relive app and the way he told the story of his running exercises in the city of Boca Raton that we've actually used that app to capture and share some of the observations from these walk and bike safety reviews. And then also wanted to commend PalmTran because we engaged local partners in these reviews and PalmTran was out there and said, hey, we've got a stop that's not in the best place for our operations. It doesn't promote good pedestrian activities and safety. Let's move it to the far side of the intersection and let's add the seats at that bus stop so that we can provide dignity to the riders, a rest point while they're waiting for the bus to arrive and promote pedestrian safety. And they were actually able to make that change the afternoon of the day that we did the review. So fantastic level of responsiveness. We've talked about Valerie departing and it's a tremendous hole. And I'm really sad to see her go. We are excited for all the things that she's been able to contribute to the TPA and look forward to working to continue a lot of those efforts and bring them to fruition. Wanted to mention just as a request, if you are interested, we are hoping that we have a number of transportation conferences that we promote on the TPA's website, but we are hoping that you would consider joining the TPA at the AMPO or Association of MPOs throughout the country. They have a national conference that's coming up in October in Scottsdale. That's a sister city up here to Phoenix area. It's part of the Valley Metro region for transit service. And we're hoping to host a peer exchange in Scottsdale with the Valley Metro staff so they can tell us a little bit about the story that they went through, the experiences that they've had taking a very hot climate urbanized area from a suburban car-centric development pattern to a community that counts on and invests in and really maintains an excellent public transit system with light rail corridors, with bus rapid transit corridors. A lot of the conversation that we're talking about here, we want to learn from a community that's maybe 10 or 20 years ahead of us. How did they make the steps how did they accomplish the steps that they took? And how can we learn from their success? And then lastly, again, as part of our strategic plan, we created an updated video. It's been posted to our website, and I hope you'll take a chance to review it. And if you have friends, colleagues who wonder what we do here at the TPA, you can point them to our homepage and say in about 150 seconds, we can give you a very thorough understanding of the roles and responsibilities of both the elected officials and the staff as we work together on our mission and vision. So Mr. Chair, that's my report for the morning.
Any questions on Executive Director's report?
It's that first week of October. I'll
give
more information
to follow up. Okay. Yeah. Good. Okay. And our last other item, I guess we did defer that earlier. Were any comments anyone from the board wanted to make? We didn't have our comment period this morning. Jim, go ahead.
Just quickly, I want to express appreciation for the pedestrian bike safety review that staff initiated. You know, any one of us or a couple of us could do that walk and you wouldn't get immediate results that was happening. So I do think those are extremely effective. So I want to again appreciate that. I mean, Indiantown Road is an area known to have had serious injuries and fatalities. So I'm grateful that it was targeted. And I also want to emphasize, I mean, I think these safety reviews are so critical. And I just want to share, for example, I had heard some months back, concern expressed from a crossing guard didn't come to me directly. And we had a situation where, you know, our police went out and observed and signage wasn't good. There was a lot of things that weren't quite right at this intersection where, you know, dozens and dozens of kids cross, and the crossing guard was having problems, you know, controlling traffic. And even the county engineer's office, you know, was involved in helping to change signage and to decide what signage was needed. So again, I'm always trying to recognize, because I know we do things within our local government, but it's always so rewarding when others participate, because you can be so much more effective. So thank you.
Anyone else? No? Okay, seeing none, then we'll move to the last item. Item four is administrative items. Do we have any public comment requests on any of these items?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay, no public comments. Would any member of the board like to have a question or like information on any of the items listed? Okay, then we're going to adjourn. Our next meeting won't be until September 16th. Everybody enjoy their summer in August. We'll take a break that month. And thank you all for being here. And we'll continue to move forward. I can't believe it's August. We're looking at August already. It just blows me away. But we stand adjourned. Thank you all. Did you?